This episode of Leading the Flock is presented by the OC Healthcare Agency. The Anaheim Ducks have partnered with the OC Healthcare Agency to provide free resources through OC Navigator to Anaheim Ducks fans to help build their healthiest self. We all have difficult days or face hard times, but the resources ducks.ocnavigator.org provides to fans can help us all bounce back. There are tips that fans can utilize to ultimately be a better version of themselves, including nourishing activities, wellness toolkits, and more. To learn more, visit ducks.ocnavigator.org.
On the ice and throughout Orange County, the Ducks strive to support by giving back to local communities and programs. Join us as we take flight over Southern California on Leading the Flock.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Leading the Flock. And Brady Leavell joins me here, and I cannot thank you enough to spend some time with us. And really, a lot centers around the mental health issue of life. And first and foremost, Brady, I want to ask you, why is it important for you to be behind the mic now?
Well, you know, there was a time in my life where, you know, I obviously have had my own struggles from early on. And, you know, during that time, I would say close to 30 years where I struggled in silence, I felt alone. And it was a really dark place for myself to be in. And when I was able to find my voice and share my story initially with just one person, with what was going on with me, with just one person, not only did that allow healing for myself, in that conversation, the other person that I first shared that to was going through something similar, not exactly the same, but similar. And then all of a sudden we're having that conversation. And so I carried that on. And as I've done this over the last few years, I've witnessed not only myself, but so many others find healing. Sometimes my healing might be different than yours or somebody else's, but having the conversation and to say, hey, look, I was a professional hockey player. My teeth come out. I looked the part, you know, I fought on the ice. I, you know, it was pretty tough. And for so long, I thought I had to, you know, carry that off the ice as well. And what that did for me is, you know, my life burned to the ground real quickly and felt like I was alone. And so being behind the mic and being able to share my story is everything to me, in hopes that if I can get on here today and it helps one person, yeah, then everything I've gone through and everything I do is worth it.
You know, Brady, and I appreciate you saying that. Reading your story, I know, and please help me if I'm incorrect in saying this, but a lot of it, or at least the start of it, stemmed from coming from a broken family. And it seemed like that kind of pushed you in a direction that you had a tough time coming back. Do you reflect on when this all started, why it started?
Yeah, you know, I ignored it for many, many years where I pushed it aside. But now that I've done therapy and really done a lot of work on myself, and it took a long time to get here, but I was able to go back to my childhood. You mentioned a broken family. My mom left, you know, I have a relationship with my mom today, but early on when she left my dad to be a single dad as a young boy, that's the first real traumatic event that happened in my life. And shortly thereafter, I was abused. And, you know, that was something that I stuffed down and felt like I could never talk about. And because I did that, you know, problems started to manifest and, you know, maybe they came out slowly, but I think looking back at it, there was definitely signs there. Very grateful for the game of hockey, because that's where I put myself. I had a stick in my hand, and when I had a stick in my hand, that's what worked for me for a long time, as far as if I just needed to escape for the time being. But the big piece was, is that I wasn't addressing why I was needing to have a stick in my hand in the first place to escape from some of my own thoughts and how I was feeling. And not knowing how to navigate that for a young boy was really confusing. Into my teenagers, just stuffed it down even further. Into young adulthood, things really spiraled out of control. And, you know, very quickly I found myself being in places I never thought possible.
Kind of dovetailing off what we're just talking about regarding, you know, the broken family and how that at least was a factor in things going or leading you down the wrong path. Do you look back? Do you remember the first time that you did, you know, have alcohol, weed, drugs, whatever it may be, although they all are a form of drugs, but do you remember that first time that you went there for help, your own help?
Yeah. You know, I think initially what it was early on was more experimentation. When I found myself playing junior hockey, moving away from home and being around, you know, some guys that were older than me. I was underage and they were legal age up here in Canada and wanting to fit in. That was the big piece for me. And I think when I made that decision, I was not prepared for how it was going to affect me. I had no experience with it, thinking, hey, this isn't a big deal. But because I had all that trauma from childhood, you know, the way that, you know, I handled that was a lot differently than, say, somebody else maybe. And I went from, you know, using hockey as my escape, and now all of a sudden I could find it in a bottle or a joint or whatever that was initially. And again, at the time, kind of realized that, hey, this could be a problem, but for a long time, it felt like it wasn't a problem, but eventually it would just continually beat me down. And I started to make one bad decision after the next and burying more of what was going on with me and making sure that I was doing everything I could to make sure that nobody really knows the real Brady. Nobody knows what happened to 5-year-old Brady. Nobody knows what's going in, you know, inside my head, because I thought if anybody really knows what's going on with me, you know, number one, I think I was concerned about my hockey career, but my friends, what would my family think? You know, there was, to me, it was just such an uphill battle to even cross that threshold of telling even one person, hey, this is what's really going on. And so when I found, you know, when I took that first drink or I got drunk for the first time, it was like, wow, this is, you know, this feels pretty good. Temporarily, I had no idea that my life was going to spiral out of control the way it did based on my trauma and my underlying mental health issues.
How did you hide it? I mean, you know, the stories I read, you're, you know, doing coke before games, you were showing up hungover, high, whatever it means, you were still able somehow to perform on the ice at a pretty high level. I mean, please tell me, because a lot of these people that are listening to this interview are hiding it. But there are other people that want to look in and understanding that there is a problem that they can't see. So how were you able to put a rosy colored lens, if you will, over all the problems that you were having?
Yeah, that's a great question, Kent. And I think I did a pretty good job at that, where if you were an outsider looking in, it would look like I was living a pretty good life and achieving some pretty high levels of success, at least in hockey. And like you said, I did everything to cover it up. But what people don't know is that though, you know, I would just show up and I would say all the right things and people would ask me how I was doing. And I would always say good, even, you know, 99% of the time I was not doing good at all. And I would just battle my way through it until I could get home to, you know, in junior hockey, my billet household, where, you know, I was essentially housed for the year. I would lock myself in the room and cry. And I remember at 16, 17 years old, I really started to contemplate my own life. And I'm thinking to myself, hey, I'm playing in the best junior hockey league in the entire world right now. And I'm 17 years old and there's not a higher level I can play. Probably a million kids in the world that would do anything to be in my position. I should be happier. This is all I've ever wanted. But why am I feeling like this? And I think there was opportunities where people saw that there were problems, but I continually would lie, say I was fine. You don't know what you're talking about. That's not true. And there's only so much somebody can do from the outside if you're not willing to talk about it or accept the help. And again, hiding it and living in that, just that fear and that shame and that guilt. Now that I'm on the other side of it, that was actually way harder than, say, when I decided to say, hey, look, I'm going to take my life back. I'm going to allow some people to come in here and help support me. That fear was so great. But I'll tell you, the fear of the thought of going back and having to live in the place that I was living in, feeling that alone, feeling that hopeless, that is way more terrifying than asking for help ever was.
Brady was, you know, in this landscape of mental health, you hear the phrase cry for help. that maybe there was a cry for help that wasn't recognized. It sounds to me, though, and when I read your story and I hear you, I don't know if there was a cry for help. You know, I don't know if did you put out that olive branch saying, I hope someone takes this, or were you just, it seems like you had this bulletproof exterior and you weren't going to let anyone in.
I think that's a part of it, Ken. But the other part of it, like, you know, just to, you know, trigger warning for people listening. And I just want people to understand that some of the places where I was, because I was that low, there's multiple times, but just one time in particular where I was, you know, on the edge of a bridge and really, you know, in that moment, not wanting to live. But I think some part of me was going, maybe somebody can help me. And I ended up being taken into the hospital and spent some time in the psychiatric ward. And I remember being in that, you know, being in there thinking, one, being embarrassed and all those things, but also being like, hey, maybe I can get some help. And that was many years ago. And I think we're doing a much better job. But the whole piece is that people struggle. Not a lot of people know how to deal with people struggling. And that's the other side to mental health, is that, yes, we need to empower people to ask for help. But where do we send them for help? Where is help available? And where are the people who actually, you know, are educated and have the experience in dealing with mental health? Because at that time, it was the emergency room and that I went to. And all of a sudden, you know, not really too many people in that atmosphere had a ton of, you know, experience with dealing with, you know, somebody who's suicidal, or they, it would be, you know, come in for 48 hours and then let you out with no follow up. And then sometimes it would feel like I was back to square one. But I'm very hopeful for the way things are now, because I know you guys have some amazing stuff going down there. And I'm up here in Canada, where there are organizations and groups that have come together that specialize in mental health and navigating that system, which wasn't available when I was going through it all these years ago. So, you know, I definitely think there were many cries for help. But again, when it came down to it, I kind of just backed off and was like, oh, I don't know if I can really tell them what's going on. And that was what kept me in that place for so long, was thinking nobody can know. I'll let them know 80 or even 90% of what's going on. But that 10%, I got to hold that back for myself, because that's too scary for anybody else to hear. And it wasn't until I released that 10% where I could actually start to begin to heal. And let me tell you, Kent, It's a process. You know, I still struggle some days. I just don't struggle in the same way that I used to. And the support I have around me and the people that I have around me, because I've allowed them to come in and they know what's going on with me and they know the signs to see. And I'm usually 95% of the time speaking on my own free will. I'd be lying to tell you if I sit here and tell you that I was perfect. Every time I'm going through something, that I'm reaching out right away. I'm still working on that.
Yeah.
But I'm in a way better place today than I was last year, 2 years ago, certainly 3 years ago. But, you know, being able to, even if it's just one person that you can count on and talk and they know what's going on, that can be life-changing. That can be life-saving, because when you can start to feel comfortable with one person, then the doors open for the professionals to come in and for that healing to begin. Again, it takes people helping people, though. I really believe that.
Brady, one word that I've kind of stood on for a while, and it's personally and professionally, is the word uncomfortable. And if you can put yourself in an uncomfortable position or feel uncomfortable, you will give yourself a chance to grow. You mentioned 10%, that 10% that you didn't want to share. Are you willing to share a story that will make us uncomfortable to the point where we are able to say, I can't believe that you are sitting here talking to me today?
I could tell you many. Don't even know what direction to take that in. But you know, the uncomfortable story that comes to mind is, you know, again, being in a hopeless place where, you know, I reached out for help and went to go get some help for my addiction issues, but at the time didn't realize the reason why I was stuck in that addiction was related to my mental health and, more importantly, my trauma, and that there was going to be work to do. And so the first time that I, you know, kind of reached out and asked for help, I kind of thought that this was it. This was, you know, I'm going to be okay because I'm asking for help. And I remember, again, holding back at that time, probably 50%, not 10%, and expecting some different results. And I remember being so hopeless.
How old were you?
And at this time I was about 24. And I was, you know, back living at my mom's house, which was a tough blow after, you know, I was signed with the Tampa Bay Lightning. I was playing in the American Hockey League for a short time before I got hurt. I had a really bright future just 2 years before that. Now I'm back at my mom's house, lost everything, and thinking, hey, I want to get help. And then feeling like it didn't work. I now know it's because I didn't do the work. But at that time, I was done. And, you know, I was using drugs and I made a decision that I was going to take as much as I needed to do so that I didn't have to be here anymore. And when I woke up in the hospital to my mom, my dad, my aunt. I was hooked up to a heart rate monitor. And you know, at the time, I just remember thinking like I was mad that I was still here. Now I got to face my parents. And it was really, you know, having to look at their faces after, you know, everything my dad did for me. He did the best he could. And, you know, my mom later in life did the best she could for me and everything. And just feeling so defeated, it was not a good place to be. And then, you know, I spent 6 months in the psych ward, repeatedly 6 months in the psych ward and pretty, you know, wasn't a fun time at all. And again, it could have been beneficial if I would have been willing to go that 100%, but at the time, 60%. Getting out of there thinking, nothing's ever going to get better. This is just the way my life is going to be forever. And, you know, I would go on to have several more overdoses, several more suicide attempts. And that's just one that sticks out in my mind because that was my mom and dad that I woke up to in the hospital, very lucky to be alive, not feeling that way, but seeing the tears in their face. And now that, you know, I'm older and in a much different place, can't imagine what that must have been like for them.
Brady, you mentioned Tampa Bay, and there was a story that I read or a portion of this story about you that I read that stuck to me was you were somewhere, got offered a truck for $500 and you wanted to go back home to Vancouver, wanted to go all night. You got pulled over or at least the lights came on behind you because it was a stolen vehicle. And at that point in time, you decided it's done. Kind of same thing. I'm going to end it. You tried to escape, but the police got you. And I remember you mentioned something about your family and how you didn't want to embarrass your family. Don't let this news get out. And they were able to do that for you. And the one thing that, and then they returned to you that said this might mean something to you was your number 70 jersey. What was that moment like for you to get out of that moment, to have the police listen to you, and then to return this jersey to you that meant so much?
Yeah, you know, and the end of that story was the police only got me because, you know, I crashed the truck into a barricade at a really high speed. The airbags went off. I had minor injuries. Very lucky again that nobody else was hurt or myself, and ended up behind bars. You know, just quickly, I spent multiple years in jail because of my mental health and addiction issues. And when I got out, they held that jersey for me. And you know, it was a moment where, you know, I was really grateful, and it also opened my eyes that, hey, maybe there is some hope here and maybe there is a chance for me to get back into hockey some way, somehow. But that was a game-worn jersey, just exhibition, but still meant a lot to me. And, you know, as we sit here, just kind of obscurely, those police officers who were there that night, you know, they're all wearing my brand. I have a clothing line and a nonprofit, Puck Support.
Great.
And, you know, they order and I go out for, you know, lunch for them when I'm in town. And even the jail guards that were in there, that I was in there with, I'm now coaching a couple of their daughters in hockey. And I was supposed to go to his outdoor rink yesterday. And I'm actually going to the jail to speak to some of the inmates and kind of share my story about how, hey, you can turn things around. But yeah, you know, at that moment, again, I thought that there was no way out of this for me. And again, that I was the only one, certainly relating as a hockey player, the only hockey player that was struggling like this. And much to my surprise, maybe naively, I wasn't, and I haven't been. And You know, I've lost friends, brothers that I played with and against in different junior and pro leagues to suicide and overdose. I don't know if you read the Sportsnet article, obviously, about that time with Tampa Bay. You mentioned about doing cocaine the night before or earlier. The guy that I spent the night with that night is no longer here. Draft pick at the Tampa Bay Lightning died of a fentanyl overdose in 2017. He was my roommate in Norfolk. And, you know, in that moment, I understood. I knew there was a problem. I just didn't think that it affected hockey. And again, I related as a hockey player. As I sit here today, I'm just hockey players. I'm aware of 94 hockey players who've died from suicide or overdose, and it's about 60-40. And that was sort of when I heard about Mitch Fadden is his name, and it's okay that I share his name because, you know, his family is, we do a lot of work with that. And when I found out that he passed away, I knew that I had to be a part of the solution moving forward, even if it was a small one. And that's why conversations like this need to take place. Going back to why is it important to be on the mic? Because I've lived it, I've survived it. And I also have many people that I loved and cared about, played with or hung out with that are no longer here to tell their stories. And those were some amazing people that were in that dark place that felt they couldn't get out of it. And to be on the other side of it and to know the loss that the families are dealing with, it's heartbreaking. And that's why I continuously, every day, to the best of my ability, try to impact this world, even if it's just by having a simple conversation with somebody. Because that, sometimes saying hi to somebody or checking in on somebody, you might just think you're doing something kind, but I know from my experience, it can be life-saving.
Brady, when you say mental health, you know, and things going on in your mind that maybe you can't explain, you identified, you knew something was wrong, but did you know it was mental health? Could you identify what it was? Or did you just think, I just need whatever this thing is, I just need to mask it with more drugs?
You nailed it. You nailed it. I had a really hard time looking in the mirror, and it took me a long time to even admit that I had a problem with drugs. And I took a moment there because I put myself back in that place, and you know, I knew something wasn't right, but I wasn't even willing to open my mind to the possibility that maybe I need help, because getting help and allowing somebody to come in and understand and know what's going on, like I told you earlier, it was terrifying for me. But now that I've done it, and here I am continuously working on myself every day and trying to help other people, and the amount of healing that came from being vulnerable, and not just myself, but others that I've worked with and seen over the last 3 years, especially that vulnerability piece is so key. And you talk about getting uncomfortable. That's where we grow. And you nailed it with that one. But I mean, I put myself back to what that felt like. And I think I would chalk it up to be like, oh, I must be depressed. But I didn't really understand what that meant.
Right.
I wasn't digging in. I know that I felt a lot, especially as a hockey player. I knew that night before games, there was this feeling where I, you know, was just like, I felt like I just wanted to run away a lot of the time and shut down, but I would chalk it up to being nervous or excited. In some cases, maybe, but I now know that I've, you know, just quickly have been diagnosed with depression, ADHD, anxiety, PTSD, right? And so the anxiety was something that I was trying to run from and not acknowledging. Now I have the tools to be able to recognize it and work through it. It doesn't mean that it goes away. I still deal with anxiety. I still deal with that depression, but I know what it is. And I know when it's coming and I can feel it. And I know that I don't have to sit alone in my depression, in my anxiety, in my dark thoughts. Right. There's still times where I don't do as good a job as maybe I should. It's a lot, as everybody knows, it's a lot easier to tell people what to do sometimes versus doing it ourselves. But I've taken great steps in doing what I needed to do, which means, you know, therapy, which means talking to professionals, which means talking to people with lived experience who also deal with similar things, and educating myself to understand and recognize the signs so that when I'm having a bad day, or I recognize there's certain times or certain months that come in a year where maybe I'm going to start to struggle, that I can start to be proactive. I can kind of start to, you know, recognize this, and I know what I need to do for myself to allow myself to move through that. And sometimes that's sitting there with the anxiety, with the depression, but not sitting by myself. Hey, this is how I'm feeling. Let's talk it through. I have a therapist. I have a great girlfriend. I have a great support system that I'm really grateful for. But that support system didn't just come out of nowhere. That support system came because I took the initiative to allow others to come in my life. And I was the one that said, hey, I'm ready. I'm here. And this is what I'm willing to do. And I'm willing to do whatever it takes, because if I don't, I'm not going to be here much longer. And I know where this takes me. And the thought of that and living in that is way scarier than telling somebody that I was abused as a kid, or that, you know, I'm feeling depressed, or I'm anxious, or I just want to lay in bed today because my mind is racing, right? And, or whatever it is for anybody else, that can be scary. But the thought of going back to where I was, I know if I go back, there's likely a chance I'm never getting out. So I'm doing everything I can ahead of time to make sure that, you know, these things not necessarily don't happen, but I can mitigate the damages.
Especially in the world of athletes, does vulnerability equal weakness? Or at least was that the perception, and was that a part of you holding it all in?
100%, 150%. And, you know, I'm not a very big guy, but there was times in junior where fighting became a part of my game for, you know, a number of reasons, sometimes just trying to stay in the lineup or whatever it is. But I remember every single time that even I fought on the ice, I was terrified. You know, I was scared. I was scared of embarrassing myself and scared of getting hurt, whatever it was. But to everybody else, here's this young man who's a warrior and he's tough and whoa, like, and this is the sense that I had as a young boy looking at some of the guys that I looked up to in the NHL. Hockey players, that's a superhero. Wow, like they have no problems. They got lots of money. You know, they don't drink, they don't do drugs. Like, that was my perception. And not to say all hockey players do that, but that's just the reality of human life. Doesn't matter if you're a hockey player, a lawyer, a policeman, a fireman. I've seen all walks of life struggle with this. But growing up in, you know, especially the era of the early 90s, the enforcer on, you know, we got the Ty Domies and the Bob Proberts, and that was what I was aspiring to be. I never ever saw a hockey player show any sign of weakness. What I would see is a hockey player lose his teeth, pick them up off the ice, hand them to the trainer, and get right back out there. And so the thought of actually talking about how I'm feeling, like in the dressing room before the game, if I'm anxious or I'm nervous or I'm hiding that from everybody. But Kent, let me tell you, I've had many conversations with some of the guys that I played with. And now we talk about it. I'm like, man, before games, I'd be sitting there and I don't know why it surprised me, but they're all like, man, I was feeling the same way. And I'm going, well, here we were all pretending that we're tough and we have it together. What if we were actually able to have these conversations and support one another, maybe the right time and place, but instead we all just shut it down and just did what we had to do to push through. And I remember so many times leaving the dressing room after a practice, after a game, and it felt like I was running to my vehicle. And I would get to my vehicle and it would just be like,
yeah,
you know, just that relief. And what if I was able to, you know, a bunch of guys from the team were able to get together and have some of these conversations, not just related to hockey, but related to life. Oh, I'm away from home, or, you know, something's going on with my kid or my sister, whoever, whatever's going on. But instead we all internalized that and felt that we couldn't talk to anybody. And a big piece too, for especially young athletes, ones that move away from home, I think talking to your parents can be really challenging too. So oftentimes they're invested, not just financially, but emotionally. Yeah. A lot's kind of riding on this. And to call them and say, hey, I'm feeling this way, or to call your friends back home. I remember actually, again, now that I think about it, I remember I did call one of my friends and he took it as, when I was 16, 17, almost took it as complaining, because in his eyes, I'm living the dream. I would do anything to be where you are. But he also didn't know what I had gone through in my life. He didn't know what was going on, you know, in any given day while I was a hockey player, how I felt. And so I think there's a lot of stigma that comes with that. I think it goes without saying. It's just a lot of challenges still, but I really do believe that mental health is moving in such a great direction for people's understanding. Again, I'm really glad that you brought up the addiction stuff, the drug talk, because that carries a way bigger stigma still than mental health. And people have a harder time understanding what that looks like and why people or how people can get themselves into that situation. And as you can imagine, I lived through 14 years of pretty severe addiction and have seen a lot. And I've never met one person who's addicted to drugs or alcohol that doesn't have an underlying mental health condition or mental illness or trauma. And that's why they're trying to escape. And that's the big conversation that needs to be had is, why are people feeling like this? Why are people using outside substances to escape? What are they escaping from? And if we can go back to that, that's where I really believe, at least for me, where I've been able to find healing, and it's changed my life. And by doing that, not only have I allowed to heal, has it allowed myself to heal, I've actually been able to be a big piece in helping others heal as well, because you talk about that vulnerability piece. Somebody's talking about this, all of a sudden, even if it's not the exact story, there's always something I feel that people can relate to. Hey, I relate to that. Her too. And now all of a sudden we're not alone. And some of these conversations can be had and giving people the strength and the courage to go back, in my case, to that 5-year-old boy who was sexually abused and walk myself through that and with a therapist or whatever works for anybody. It just happened to be the case in my situation, go back there and have an understanding. Okay. I'm not a bad guy, right? I partook in some bad things. I made some bad choices. I ended up in some bad places. I take accountability for all of it, but why was I running? Why was I trying to mask? And once I was able to get back to that and understand it and move forward in that is when I was able to start to take my life back.
And I'm so glad you mentioned superhero, because I think society immortalizes athletes. And I think, as you mentioned, or as we were talking about, being weak is something that wasn't looked upon as an athlete. And they are gladiators to the most part. I don't care what sport you're talking about, but it seems like it all the time. I do want to ask you now, and you've really touched on a ton of stuff as far as just communication, speak out, talk, let people know you're not okay. These are things how you remain who you are on a daily basis. But how does Brady find happiness today?
That's a great question. There's still days where, you know, because I have sometimes pretty severe depression, there's days when joy, happiness is hard to find. But I'm really grateful to, you know, the fact that I was able to play hockey my whole life and that's what worked for me. I took close to 10 years off, did not skate, didn't believe I would ever put skate on again. I never even imagined, because of losing my career and as we touched on where my life took me to these places, it was no secret. You mentioned earlier about them leaving that out of the newspaper so my family didn't hear about it. The only reason I said that was because there was a couple other incidents previous where they didn't, and that my dad's a scout in the Western Hockey League and a very respected retired fire captain and president of the Union of the Province of British Columbia. So it was hard. But where do I find happiness is when I put my skates on and I get on the ice, and even if it's for 5, 10, 20 minutes, that's where I can find peace. And I'm back coaching right from young little guys and girls all the way up to current NHL players in the summertime where I live. I'm on the ice with Bo Horvat and Sam Gagne and some of these guys. And so to be back in the game and to be back in the community anytime, you know, I'm have my skates on, especially when I'm in a role where I'm able to give my knowledge, not just as a hockey player, as a hockey coach, but I can kind of use hockey as the vehicle to open up the conversations for especially the young, the youth, and used that kind of like my hockey skills. I'm still pretty good with a puck, I guess. And their eyes kind of light up, but then you build that rapport and then you build these relationships and having conversations on the ice and in the dressing rooms and with parents that I have never heard before in the hockey community. When I leave that rink, that's when I find happiness, because I believe that, it's no secret. I feel good about it, but I, more than anything, I feel good about the future. Not just of hockey, but of humanity, and that, you know, getting my skates back on was the door that opened for all of this to happen. So when I'm having a tough day, I'm really lucky. We live in Northern Canada here, and it's minus 15 Celsius right now, and there's outdoor rinks and there's lakes everywhere, and everyone's got a rink going. So it's really easy to find ice. So right now it's, if I even remotely think I'm going to have a bad day, we're going to the rink. Let's go and go spend some time with some kids who are out there or whatever, do a free one. If there's a kid there, I'll spend an hour and do a free one-on-one. And I leave with my heart full, and sometimes leaving, Kent, that, you know, life is still out there. And when I take my skates off and I'm back to reality, sometimes those challenges are still there, but I know that there's a way to deal with it, and I know that I can always just go put my skates back on if I need to.
Brady, you mentioned the word reality a couple times, and I think it's important. You mentioned burning bridges, losing friends. Now you have your relationship with your mom, your dad, obviously, your girlfriend. You have a great support system around you, but going through this process, you've lost some family. You have some kids, I know. Are you able to repair or have... Can you share with us how you've been able to, now you're trying to get your life back? Have you been able to get your past back?
Yeah. I'm really glad you asked this. And it's obviously a tough question. Not too many people ask me this question, not even, you know, my closest friends, but it's something that's really important because I lost family. I lost friends, many friends. I think, you know, there's some damage. They'll never come back. And it's been hard to have to accept that, but I don't give up. As far as my kids go, I am working through that. I didn't see my kids for 7 years, and I have two kids out in BC, and, you know, my little boy is a 13-year-old hockey player, and many years where I was wrapped up in mental illness and addiction and didn't get to see them. But, you know, I have contact with my son now. My daughter's still working through some stuff. And, you know, I'm hoping that those relationships continue to, you know, be mended. I know there's a lot of damage there. And again, I accept a lot of responsibility for that. And I know that it's going to take time. And I think that was a big thing that was missing for me, even when I was trying to work through my mental health or my addiction issues, was that I wasn't willing to really understand that this was going to take time, and this was going to have to get uncomfortable for healing to happen, for growth. Yeah. And that was tough. And, you know, you get a month or you're doing well for 6 months, and somewhere in our minds, at least mine, it was like, come on, I'm doing better. Everyone should come back. But that's not how things work. And, you know, my actions affected people and hurt people. And, you know, I've done everything that I can, continue to do everything that I can to put myself in the best position to be the best dad. If and when that time comes and I get to, you know, be more hands-on, I try to be the best friend and really take pride in the relationships that I'm building today, because there was ones that I really valued that I lost through some of my actions. And unfortunately, that's the way that it is today. But I'm also super grateful that, you know, I do have just tremendous people in my life, many from my past and several people that I didn't know who have become some of my best friends in the world. And sometimes, you know, there's shifts that have to take place. But, you know, the relationship with my dad, never thought that was going to be restored. We're better today than we've ever been, right? Talk to him every day. And obviously we live far away from each other, but it there's hope there. There's hope. And, you know, if people are willing to do the work and really work, it's uncomfortable. It's tough and it takes time, but you also have to give other people time sometimes. And that's been a challenge, but yeah, you know, I'm really hopeful for the future and grateful for the connection that I do have with my son, Brody, and, yeah, dying to get on the ice with him. That's for sure.
I can't tell you how happy that makes me, especially being a dad of a young daughter. That's I know how special those relationships are. I appreciate, you know, your time and going through all this with us. And it's so important to get the word out. And you alluded to puck support, and in reference to a story that, you know, you shared with us. Could you kind of dive into that just a bit more and let people know that how that is spreading your message and how that is kind of your mission?
Yeah. If we have a few minutes, I'd love to tell the story about kind of where it originated from. I mentioned earlier when I found out Mitch Fadden passed away, it really kicked me into gear to want to do something. This was about 2.5-3 years ago. And I'll tell you, I had nothing. I'd walked out of a jail cell and had nothing. I didn't have any friends. I didn't have any connection to hockey. I had nothing. All I had was my experience. And I thought my experience could help one person. And so I started a podcast and started to share my story. And then I heard the story of Mitch and several others, as I mentioned, the 94 hockey players. And I wanted to do something. I wanted to start a charitable organization, a nonprofit organization. And so I started to call these lawyers and they would tell me, hey, it's going to cost about $10,000. And that was overwhelming because I barely had $10 at the time. And I didn't really know what to do. I had this idea. I had this great name, Puck Support, had the website domain and this idea, but what was I going to do? And fortunately, Doug Gilmore, Hockey Hall of Famer, his older brother, Dave, actually his whole family minus Doug are all retired prison guards up here in Canada. Dave was a retired pro hockey player as well. He kind of saw what I was doing and took to my story, and Doug became a friend. And Dave did a small fundraiser back in November of 2020. And on his 70th birthday, he ran 20K and rode his bike 50K. I know it's kilometers, not miles, but it's a long ways. I don't know if I could do it now at 35. It's a long ways. It's not quite as far as miles, but it's a long ways. And he raised about $3,000 and he sent it to me. And at the time it was a big deal. You know, somebody trusting me with several thousand dollars. And I didn't really know what to do. I was only like 7 months into my recovery and pretty fragile. And it wasn't enough to do the nonprofit. I really didn't know what to do. I was like, oh, I'll get a video made and talk about what we're going to do with this money, like a professional video. But then what? I actually bought a heat press and a vinyl cutter and learned how to build a website and design logos and everything else. So the sweater you see, I pressed myself.
Mental health over hockey.
Yep. With the Puck Support. And, you know, a big part of what we do is we put a name of one of those hockey players in all of our stuff. Oh, wow. And this one is Brandon Beeman, who took his own life in 2017. Garrett Burnett, former Anaheim Duck.
Yes, no Garrett.
He was a friend from my home. He's from Coquitlam. I'm from Port Coquitlam. Tragically took his own life just last year. He's in our database. That's a big part of what we do is honoring those hockey players that we've lost. Sorry. The clothing line is blown up bigger than I ever thought it could. And I'm still kind of figuring that out because now stores want to start to carry it, but it was never what I wanted Puck Support to be. I never wanted a clothing line, but it's what I could do in the meantime. And over the last 2 years, we got people all over the world wearing Puck Support in rinks, at their schools, in their offices. And we get messages all the time. It'll be, you know, sure, it'll say mental health over hockey or something about ending the stigma or, you know, it's okay to be not okay. Pain is real, but so is hope. And I wear it and it happens to me, but also other people where they're like, what did your shirt say? And now, you know, in hockey rinks, instead of parents talking about their kid needing more ice time, we got dads talking about some of the challenges they have, or moms, the challenges that they have in their own households and with themselves or whoever. And these conversations are happening. So the awareness from the clothing line has been fantastic. But I'm also happy to report that in August, we became a registered non-for-profit organization on another sector. So we're tirelessly, you know, building programs and, you know, starting up here in Canada first. But we do have aspirations of moving, you know, getting to the States, because we have a lot of people from the United States that support us and want to be a part of it. Really focusing, the idea was former junior and professional hockey players, because that's what I was narrow-sighted at first. It was, and I'm thinking of all these stories and hearing all these stories of guys I played with and against. We got to do something for these players. I quickly understood that, you know, to make a significant impact, we have to get to the youth We have to get to the parents, and it's not just about the hockey players. So it's become about using hockey as the vehicle. And the slogan is igniting change in mental health and substance misuse by setting the hockey world in motion. So by up here in Canada, using hockey as that vehicle to create these conversations, and then, you know, hopefully helping people navigate where they can get support, and getting out there and educating people on mental health and how to recognize signs and how to help support somebody, because doctors and these professionals, they're not always around, but people are usually there. And if we can understand that anybody can help anybody at any given time, nobody has all the answers, not any doctor, not any psychologist, but if you're willing to help and you're wanting to help, more often than not, that's what's going to happen. But people are scared to have these conversations.
Yeah,
it's unfortunate, but it's becoming, people are becoming more transparent, and healing is really started to happen. So that's where we're at with Puck Support now. We're going to do a big launch here in the springtime in Canada, and it's been a lot of trial and error. We have a board of directors with former police officers and firefighters and hockey people and doctors and people that, you know, have come together to really rally around the cause to make sure things are staying in order. I'm the acting CEO, but I don't really have the knowledge to do that, but that's what I'm doing now. And I'll continue doing everything that I need to do. If that's building websites and running social media, everything has basically been myself, because nobody was coming to save me. Nobody was coming to do this for me. And if you want to get something done, you just sometimes have to start. And that's what I did. And I'm really proud of myself, but I'm also very grateful for the hockey community and the people who have rallied, around me, around the cause. And I think it's not necessarily anything to do with me. It's just having an understanding that mental health and substance abuse affects us all in one way or the other. I always tell people this when I speak, I do public speaking, and I always tell people, if anybody in this room who's over the age of 18 years or 18 years old or older, if you can stand up right now and tell me that you honestly don't know somebody in your life who's been affected by mental health or substance abuse, please. And I've never had one person be able to stand up and say, nope, I don't know anybody with any mental health struggles or any addiction issues. And that's sort of the reality. So if it's so common, unfortunately so common, why is it even more common for the people who are going through it to hide it, or to want to hide it, or to feel like they have to hide it? And on top of that, especially, this is for parents listening, I can't tell you enough that keeping your I don't want to say problems or issues, but whatever's going on, if you have a son or a daughter or a husband or a wife who's going through something, if the old way to be was shut the doors, close the curtains, nobody's going to find out what's going on in our household because we're going to take care of this. And I'll tell you, Kent, that unfortunately there's many families, and the vast majority of them are hockey families that I deal with, who have lost their son, lost their daughter, lost their husband, who thought the same thing and thought that nobody can find out, because what if the neighbors judge us? What if the hockey coach doesn't want him on our team anymore, or whatever the reason is? And when we do that, we limit the support for the person who is immediately going through it, but also limit the support for the caregivers, those who are trying to support someone going through mental health or addiction issues. So limiting that support can be dangerous. I think as parents, as you said, I'm a parent. I also have a young 2-year-old here in Muskoka as well. I like to think that I'm a dad. I know best. I have all the answers. Who's gonna help my kid better than me? But sometimes it takes outsiders, I don't want to say outsiders, maybe the wrong word, but people who are not right there, right in it, to come in and offer the support to that person struggling or the family members. Because if you don't know and you don't know how to navigate it, it can be extremely overwhelming and oftentimes can end in tragedy. So we really need to be proactive and open-minded to the fact that, hey, you know, there's so many people, you go anywhere and you look around, you won't see it. They won't have a little bubble over their head that says what they're going through. But you look around, you go to an Anaheim Ducks game, and there's several thousand, let's say 15 to 20,000 people there. Bet you there's about 2,000 people in there that are struggling that night. And that's the reality. So, you know, we're not alone in this. And that's the big piece, is that when you're struggling, at least when I was struggling, I felt like nobody understands. Nobody has gone through this. Come to find out, way more people than I would have ever believed have gone through something very, very similar. And now we work together sometimes on a daily basis to help each other. And that's saved my life.
Last question for you. There's no question, just sitting here, I mean, reading your story now being able to talk to you, which has been a true honor about, you know, your place in life and your meant, why are you here? It's very evident you're here to spread this word and talk to people and get this message out. But it's incredible to look back on your career. You mentioned Tampa Bay, you've skated alongside Stamkos, you've had Tyler Myers, Jamie Benn, just to name of scratching the surface of players now who of course are big NHL stars. Is there a what if ever?
I'd be lying if I said no. Many years, like I said, I didn't skate for 10 years. I remember being behind bars and everyone in there rallied around the TV watching Stanley Cup playoffs or just an NHL game. And, you know, they all knew I was a hockey player and they're like, oh, you know that guy, or aren't you going to watch the game? And it was really difficult to watch hockey for a long time because I was always, oh, I played with that guy, or I had more points than that guy, I had more penalty minutes than that guy. That was my attitude for a long time. And it took me until I started to get vulnerable and to start talking about what was really going on with me. And I actually had to go back to, like I said earlier, to that five-year-old boy and also to that teenager, also to that young in my early 20s trying to navigate pro hockey and really put myself in that mindset. Where was I at? Maybe I had, a lot of skill and the ability, but my mind, there was nothing that was going to make my hockey career, unless I was to go back and really work on myself then, which was clearly never going to happen because people tried, then, you know, my hockey career was never going to pan out the way that I dreamed it. And I always tell people this. You mentioned Jamie Benn, and he was my line mate in Kelowna. I played a few more games than him that year, but I even had more points than Jamie Benn. I'm not comparing myself to Jamie. He's twice the hockey player I ever was. But, he's coming up on one of his final years of, I think, a $76 million contract. And that's a lot of money. He's an former Art Ross Trophy winner. He's won an Olympic gold, the World Junior gold, lost in the Stanley Cup Finals. Hell of a career. Tell people this all the time. I wouldn't trade my life right now for Jamie Benn's life. And I don't have anywhere close to, I don't even have $7,600 right now, I don't think, let alone $76 million. But I'll tell you what I do have. I wake up every day. I know who I am. I know I'm still working through things, but I have such a greater purpose than any sort of team award or personal award could have ever meant to me. And that might not be the same for everybody else, but I'm just so grateful to be in this place. I feel more fulfillment doing this than I ever did, even if you score in a big goal or playing in a big game or any of that. But for so long, my life was centered around Brady, the hockey player. And I didn't know who I was outside of that. Come to find out, I didn't even know myself as a hockey player. But so often there are people, guys who retire from the NHL, and I know several who are struggling right now, that they got lots of money in the bank, but they don't know what they're doing now because that purpose is gone and they don't have the rink to go to every day. And there's not a ton of accountability or a reason to maybe not drink tonight or whatever that may be. And it spirals out of control really quickly. And if you're not fulfilled and don't have purpose and something to, outside of ourselves, purpose can't be ourselves, something greater than ourselves, at least for me, I can only speak on my experience, then none of that would be worth anything to me. And that $76 million would have ended up killing me in the process. So, there is some what ifs. I'm playing senior hockey again and doing some skills coaching. I get on the ice with the NHL guys. I was on the ice with a BCHL team. Some of the kids were drafted and they're good hockey players. I scrimmaged with them and I'm thinking to myself, like, ooh, I'm not that far off like with some of these guys, and I'm 35, but I'd be lying if I said it hasn't crossed my mind. I've had a couple tryout offers in some of the minor leagues and over in Europe, and not just not so sure. It's not just a social media blitz right. to get some attention to their team or whatever. But someone asked me last night, and I opened up some question and answers on my social media, and someone asked me, would you sign in lower level minors? And I didn't even have to think about it. And before I would have been like, maybe, but I don't have to think about it. I love what I'm doing, and I just want to continually build on what I'm doing, from public speaking, from, you know, doing podcasts, from coaching. Got a ton of opportunity there. You know, not too long ago, I was in a jail cell just over three years ago. And now, you know, I'm working with NHL players, got offered to be the head to run the development for the major AAA center where I live. And I wouldn't trade it for the world. I love my life. There's a lot that I want to work towards. I don't have a ton, but I started with nothing, and I've worked my butt off to get here. And it's been more rewarding than playing hockey is ever was for me. And I don't feel that. I don't feel those stress. Like when I get up to do a talk in front of 1,000 people or 2,000 people, I was way more nervous going in to play a game, even in minor hockey, when there was like 10 people in the stands. So I don't know. You know, I miss it. I'm enjoying playing, but the what ifs, you're damn right. There's some what ifs, but I'm working through it now.
Well, Brady, I'll tell you what, when it comes to not trading anything, I wouldn't trade this hour plus that we've had a chance to chat and learn your purpose and your story and what you're doing. And I thank you. And I think I speak for so many people. And a lot of what we're doing centers around the OC Healthcare Agency, which is a huge out here in Orange County. And the Angels are behind it. The Ducks are behind it. And they're helping not just, you know, athletes, but people in general. So I know this story will open some eyes. And like you said, if just it helps one person, we've done our job. You've done your job, and please keep doing what you're doing.
Well, thank you so much for the kind words. Thank you for the time. Really grateful for the opportunity. Thank you to the Anaheim Ducks for having these conversations and partnering with OCN. I did have an opportunity to cruise the website, and from somebody who has been in a place where it felt like there was no help and there weren't resources, the way that they've set this website up is so clear. And you know, it's going to be hard, but it is a great place. They have talking about gratitude and happiness, and finding gratitude has been everything for me. There's a youth portal, a portal for parents. There's so much information and access to resources on this site that I highly, and I mean it when I say it, if you're down in the Orange County area and you're struggling, this is a great place to start. I spent an hour on that website going through things. I wasn't sure if we were going to talk about more about it, but as somebody who struggled and still struggles, it is a phenomenal, easy to navigate, and it's seemingly like I put myself, if I'm struggling and if I'm looking for something, it's there. So, you know, it's there. Access it, use it. You don't have to do this alone. There are people that care. There are people with the experience. And again, thank you to OCN for what they're doing. Thank you to the Ducks and the Angels, because yes, it's about athletes, but because, you know, an organization like the Ducks or the Angels or the NHL players associated or tied to these organizations, that in itself will drop others in who aren't the athlete, but maybe fans. Because guess what? If you can see an NHL superstar and he's struggling, you know, I know what it would have made me feel like as a young boy to see. I wouldn't feel good that somebody's struggling, but it would make me feel like, hey, if, you know, whoever that I look up to is struggling, I don't want to use any names. I almost did because I don't want to label any of the players. But if so-and-so was struggling and he's working through it or she's working through it, then I can too. So thank you for what you're doing. And just again, grateful for the opportunity. And I can't say it enough. Check out the OCN website, because I wish there was something like that around for when I needed it.
All right, Brady. Thanks again. Look forward to doing this very soon with you, and all the best to you and your family.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
This episode of Leading the Flock is presented by the OC Healthcare Agency. The Anaheim Ducks have partnered with the OC Healthcare Agency to provide free resources through OC Navigator to Anaheim Ducks fans to help build their healthiest self. We all have difficult days or face hard times, but the resources ducks.ocnavigator.org provides to fans can help us all bounce back. There are tips that fans can utilize to ultimately be a better version of themselves, including nourishing activities, wellness toolkits, and more. To learn more, visit ducks.ocnavigator.org.
This is an Anaheim Ducks original production on DuckStream.